following podcast is brought to you by the Communications and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. I'm DJ Moco, and this is Creasing Corners. Grab a drink, get cozy, and get ready to read between the lines. Don't fall for propaganda. Welcome back. This is episode 4 of Creasing Corners. Today, we're going to talk about Animal Farm by George Orwell. So, a classic. You may have heard this book. It is a classic, and it is short. It's a very easy read. You might have read this book when you were in middle school, maybe high school. And it's a great read. George Orwell is a great author. Animal Farm by George Orwell was published in 1945. The genre is satire or political satire. It's a dystopian fiction, and it's overall an allegory. We'll talk about that much later when we discuss the writing style and figurative language of this novel. This book is a way to look at government, and the characters consist of farm animals. And they're not anthropomorphic farm animals, although they do kind of become that way. They are regular farm animals. Here's the story of Animal Farm. They overthrow their farmer because they realize they are worked without freedom or pay. And there's three pigs, which are very important characters. They're named Napoleon, Snowball, and Squealer. And they make the rules for the farm after they overthrow their farmer. These were the 7 rules. Walking on 2 legs is an enemy. 4 legs plus wings is a friend. No animal shall wear clothes, sleep in a bed, drink alcohol, or kill another animal. And finally, all animals are equal. These are the initial rules if you want to be an animal on the farm. There are other kinds of animals. There's a bird, there's sheep, there's horses, but we're not really focused on them much, really. A lot of them are symbolism. So the pigs are the most intelligent. If you know anything about pigs, you know that they are an intelligent species. So they try to teach the other animals how to read. And these animals can't figure out spelling for nothing. They don't understand the alphabet or how singular words can conjure up a phrase. So that means the pigs are kind of more in power because of this. And the pigs, Napoleon, Snowball, and Squealer are all competing for power. Snowball is well-liked in the farm for his work, especially during the Revolution, where farmers try to take over the farm again, but the animals win, and Snowball was a big part of that. However, because Snowball is getting all this attention and this likability from the other farm animals, Napoleon is upset by this. He wants all the power to himself. And to establish this is a communist-built government of animals where they're all working. They all get their rations, their fair rations, and it's basically they share everything. So Snowball introduces a windmill to make working easier. Napoleon, for whatever reason, disagrees. He actually does not have a real reason. So when there's people in favor of Snowball, that's when Napoleon decides to summon dogs to chase him away. At this point, the pigs are in charge now, not only the pigs, but Napoleon, most importantly. Snowball has been driven off the farm. Then Napoleon decides to bring the idea to build a windmill. And the other animals were like, oh, that's kind of what Snowball wanted to do. But Squealer decides to spread rumors about Snowball and makes him the villain of the farm. And Snowball's not here to defend himself, so there's a bigger voice, the pig, that's spreading rumors about another leader that they had and could no longer defend himself. So as we proceed through this communist government that has slowly become corrupt, we see the pigs start to break the rules. The reason they do this is because they think they deserve to. They say, we deserve to. Snowball is the enemy. Napoleon's good. Napoleon's government and ruling is good. Do not defy that. And if you defy that, we got the dogs. So the rules end up getting altered by Napoleon. And this is to favor the pigs. So they start to cross out things and change words and just favor the pigs and the rules. The hardest worker, Boxer the horse, collapses. He is the hardest worker. He really is the hardest worker. He collapses and is sent to the quote-unquote hospital, which is actually the glue factory. The pigs have sent him to a glue factory. The sheep, who have been repeating four legs good, two legs bad, have now begun to repeat four legs good, two legs better. And that's because the pigs decided they wanted to walk on two legs and put on clothes. In the end, we see on the rules that they've written on the barn wall, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. And it's apparent by the end that it's a political allegory. It's written to criticize many forms of government, not just Soviet Russia. At the time, in 1945, we were dealing with the Cold War, Soviet Russia. We had just gotten out of World War II. So it's to inform younger audiences or any audience about political propaganda, which spreads as easily as these pigs have to their farm. By the end of the story, we can see that there's just the same cycle over and over again with corrupt governments. The pigs basically turn into dictators. This book tells us that communism wouldn't work, and any form of corrupt government where people are power hungry. I've just described the story to you. Let's dive into the figurative language. This is an allegory. If you don't know what an allegory is, it's a story with hidden meaning. It's typically moral or political. Think of Plato's Allegory of the Cave. To me, I thought this book had pretty obvious meaning. It might be because I'm more politically in tune. I actually didn't know a whole lot about communism when I was younger, so I sort of fell for the propaganda in schools that communism was horrible and Soviet Russia was horrible, and it was, but so is America, right? So I didn't think about communism a lot as a kid, and I didn't even think about democracy a lot as a kid and America's government. But I know that in the school system, we are taught that communism is bad. And today, people believe it too. And it could be true. Communism might be bad. It could be bad. It is bad. In many instances, it has been bad. But who's to say democracy is not bad either? Who's to say that the government in America is not bad as well and should have a story written about it? This book can apply to that as well. It's not just about communism. It's about corrupt governments and noticing these propaganda rituals and regimes. It's a way of educating people on how to interpret political information and news. It might not be so obvious to people who lack media literacy or believe everything they see in the news. And I think this book is a good introduction to people who do believe that way. This book did not have a lot of dialogue, and when it did, it was well placed. It was said in an effective way. It's also in third person, so we see everything, but we see it as if we're a farm animal on the farm. It's not first person per se, but we are a spectator on this farm. But we're not seeing a whole lot of the pigs behind the scene. We're kind of seeing what we would be if we were Boxer or Benjamin, the donkey, or the sheep or the raven, anything like that. That's not a pig. I want to read some passages from this. This is page 58. "That is the true spirit, comrade," cried Squealer, but it was noticed he cast a very ugly look at Boxer with his little twinkling eyes. He turned to go, then paused and added impressively, "I warn every animal on this farm to keep his eyes very wide open, for we have reason to think that some of Snowball's secret agents are lurking among us in this moment." 4 days later, in the late afternoon, Napoleon ordered all the animals to assemble in the yard. When they were all gathered together, Napoleon emerged from the farmhouse, wearing both his medals, for he had recently awarded himself Animal Hero First Class and Animal Hero Second Class, with his 9 huge dogs frisking around him and uttering growls that sent shivers down all the animals' spines. They all cowered silently in their places, seeming to know in advance that some terrible thing was about to happen. What I enjoy about this passage is that it really does show the communism aspect of it with comrade power dynamics among these animals and their fear when it comes to the dictators. It's well written. It's a good two paragraphs. It gives you enough information about how these dynamics work. So here's an instance where there could have been dialogue, but there wasn't. It's at the very end, and I'll read it to you. Like all of Napoleon's speeches, it was short and to the point. He too, he said, was happy that the period of misunderstanding was at an end. For a long time there had been rumors, circulated, he had reason to think, by some malignant enemy, that there was something subversive and even revolutionary in the outlook of himself and his colleagues. They had been credited with attempt to stir up rebellion among the animals on neighboring farms. Nothing could be further from the truth. Their sole wish, now and in the past, was to live at peace and in normal business relations with their neighbors. This farm, which he had the honor to control, he added, was a cooperative enterprise. The title deeds, which were in his own possession, were owned by the pigs jointly. This could have been a piece of dialogue with an entire speech, but George Orwell shortens it, and I think it works well because we don't have to know everything of what he's saying. It could be a summary of what he's saying. I would have appreciated it, but I also am pretty neutral to it. This is also around the end when they start to befriend the humans again, or just befriend the humans, period. They never did. And so the cycle continues and continues, where the people on two legs are in power and they can dictate anything. So this was during the time of Soviet Russia, or just before, honestly. It was right before. George Orwell was born in British India, and as he grew up, he saw a lot of injustice, and once he became an officer in that country, he watched other officers abuse the natives of India. So he decided to write themes like that to pull people away from propaganda and to notice the things that they should be noticing, and noticing that some of these things are bad and that government is not always good. This book also proves communism will never work because it'll always turn into a dictatorship or a corrupt government. I honestly thought this book was great for an audience, a younger audience. So hence why it's a book you've probably read in middle school and high school. I didn't get the chance to read it. That's why I read it as a college student. What I think as a creative writer and a reader is that there is substance to this, and it is for any age group, no matter your political stance or your political knowledge. It is an informative read. I'm pretty progressive and I'm left-leaning, so to read something like this, I thought it was pretty obvious, but someone who could be on the right might not think that this stuff is obvious. We might see parallels in this book to our government today. Isn't that bizarre? I honestly do recommend the book to a lot of those who have thought about reading it. I have not yet read 1984 by George Orwell, and I sincerely do want to. I would imagine that it reflects the same themes as I've heard before, and it is a classic, and I'd love to read it and get you into more political fiction that's not super political. There's not a lot of terms that are political, so I think George Orwell does a great job in making it accessible. The writing itself, I didn't think it was too hefty. I thought that for a middle schooler, it would be good all the way up to a college student. In my college student eyes, as a creative writer, I enjoyed it. I understood it. I felt like, yes, this is actually something that could apply to any timeline, including now. So I want to end off on my final opinions. I'm giving it a 10 out of 10. And the reason why I give it a 10 out of 10 is because it's great for any age group. It's informative. It tells you what to look out for in terms of political propaganda. And it's a historical piece that you can refer back to and sort of tie to the time of Soviet Russia, British India, any sort of government really, and look back and analyze what they were doing and how that was wrong. And it really does teach you how to pull away from propaganda and how to notice it. Thank you for listening to Creasing Corners.